They are the backbone of who we are and what we do in the community, and we certainly appreciate the work that they put in.
Norton Sound Health Aides reach a deal to stay on the job. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a Homer lawmaker questions the governor's budget priorities.
That's why state assistance is needed, because for the most part, these utility extensions are not going to pencil out.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Communities throughout the Norton Sound region will continue to have patient care come Monday, December 19th. Health aides will not go on strike. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin reports.
Community health aides are the only health care providers in most communities in rural Alaska. The Norton Sound Health Aid Association issued a proclamation saying if their immediate supervisors were not removed from their positions, they would strike Monday morning, December 19th, beginning at 8 o'clock. It is not clear if Village Health Services Director Barbara Collins was removed from the position or if she stepped down, but health aides in the region are pleased in knowing they'll soon have a new supervisor. Mary David remains Assistant Vice President of Hospital Services. Norton Sound Health Corporation President and CEO Devin Parlicker could not give specifics as to how the issues have been resolved. Parlicker did say that Norton Sound Administration is in communication with the community health aides.
Our intent at Norton Sound, and I speak on behalf of our board of directors and staff, is that these issues never come up again where, you know, it takes so much for us to respond to our employees. And that we are in continuous communication with them to ensure that we're proactive in addressing their concerns and making sure that patient care is not compromised.
Parlicker says community health aides are the frontline providers in rural Alaska.
They are the backbone of who we are and what we do in the community, and we certainly appreciate the work that they put in and the intent of the board of directors and management staff at Norton Sound is to ensure that we have a strong workforce that is committed to patient care. It doesn't have to resort to this in order for us to listen to them.
Health aides throughout the region wrote formal letters to various administrators and to the Norton Sound Board of Directors. The most alarming concern was that up to 70% of health aides in the region either resigned or were fired during the 18 months Collins worked as Director of Village Health Services. In letters sent to Norton Sound staff, aides spoke of being constantly belittled and bullied. One health aide said Collins made them, quote, feel like we are incompetent and downright stupid. She went further, saying health aides are capable and have gone through years of training. The health aides voiced their issues and concerns in verbal and written communication and said their issues were never addressed. Devin Parlicker again said he cannot comment on the specifics of how the issue has been resolved, whether Collins was removed or stepped down from her position. He's been the CEO and president of Norton Sound Health Corporation for exactly 1 month yesterday, and does say that in any organization, there are ongoing issues that need to be addressed between frontline staff and management.
So what I'm working on is to address this in a systemic manner. Instead of making this an isolated incident, I'm making this as an opportunity for us to improve and work on our ability to resolve conflicts and move forward.
In a release from Norton Sound Health Corporation, they assure Norton Sound residents that there will be no disruption in patient care. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kanin.
Whether genetically engineered salmon are a danger to America's oceans and kitchen tables, or the future of food production, was up for debate in Washington yesterday. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Senator Begich calls genetically modified salmon frankenfish. Created by Aqua Bounty Technologies in Massachusetts, the process involves taking an Atlantic salmon, adding a growth hormone gene from a Pacific Chinook, and a promoter gene from an eel-like Atlantic fish. That makes them grow faster and stronger. But Begich fears these super fish could get loose and wreak havoc. He and Senator Lisa Murkowski have introduced a bill that would ban interstate commerce of genetically engineered salmon, and Begich solicited advice from mostly like-minded experts at a Commerce Subcommittee hearing he chaired Thursday. The Food and Drug Administration is the agency that decides whether to approve the fish, but the senator says the FDA doesn't typically grapple with questions about the health of fish stocks and the environment.
As you can imagine, it's very difficult to assess environmental impacts from fish that have never existed before now. And the FDA is now asked to carry out an impossible task of trying to assess the food safety and environmental impacts of genetically engineered fish.
The president of Aqua Bounty withstood congressional scrutiny on his product. Ron Stottish wants FDA approval to sell the first genetically engineered, or GE, salmon as human food in the U.S. He says fish farms all over the country could benefit from it.
What you can accomplish by selective stock enhancement or breeding in 25 years, we can accomplish in a single generation. We can characterize the nature of the change, we can specifically measure the change, and we can basically understand the implications of the change and the impact on production.
The Aqua Bounty salmon may be marketed for having faster growth and increased survival rates, but George Leonard, the Ocean Conservancy's aquaculture program director, testified there's no way to make sure the GE fish don't mix with wild salmon.
What is at stake here is no less than the future of fish, natural ecosystems, and our seafood supply. Now, proponents of GE salmon would have us believe that there is no risk that the fish will get out. And even if they do get out, there is no risk that GE salmon will take hold or reproduce with native salmon populations. I would urge the committee to seriously question those assumptions.
The Ocean Conservancy wants the National Marine Fisheries Service and other agencies with expertise in fishery biology more involved in the process, rather than leaving it up to the FDA. They want what Leonard calls a modern environmental risk assessment, and until that's done, they want a moratorium along the lines of what Begich is calling for. A fish geneticist, John Epifanio, with the Illinois Natural History Survey, testified there's a long history of non-native invasive fish species overrunning local fisheries.
Based on many decades of study on salmon in particular, the fish genetics community has discovered that even very subtle genetic differences between previously isolated groups can seriously disrupt survival and reproduction in future generations.
Epifanio says there's no proof that genetically engineered salmon won't breed with or out-eat and kill off wild salmon.
Salmon and other fishes are a little bit more difficult to control should an escape occur, should there be some unforeseen problem, more difficult than a cow or a goat. If Dolly the sheep, for example, was to escape, we'd go out and get in the pickup truck and go find her.
Alaska would hunt it.
Yeah, well.
The bill offered by Senators Begich and Murkowski is not expected to move forward soon, but Begich says they helped influence the FDA to slow down its approval of Aqua Bounty's request and review more carefully the implications of genetically modified fish. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
An associate of Arnie Fugelvog, former fisheries aide to Senator Lisa Murkowski, is now himself in trouble for a similar violation, false reporting of sablefish or black cod catches from the Gulf of Alaska. KTOO's Matt Miller has this report.
Charges against Freddie Joe Hankins were filed on Halloween for making a false statement and a false record of fish sold in interstate commerce. Federal fisheries investigators allege that sometime around September of 2006, Hankins harvested about 6,300 pounds of black cod that were counted toward his individual fishing quota for the central Gulf of Alaska area, when the fish was actually caught in the western Yakutat area. That fish allegedly had an ex-vessel value of over $32,000 and was eventually transported across state lines from where it was landed in Yakutat to Seattle. The charging documents do not specifically name Arnie Fugelvog, the former North Pacific Fishery Management Council member and U.S. Senate fisheries aide, but they do name his company, Camelar Incorporated, that at one point featured Fugelvog as half owner. State business records indicate that Cynthia Fugelvog became full owner of the company sometime before April of 2007. Arnie Fugelvog faces sentencing February 7th for a similar falsification of catch records in 2005. He'll likely be sentenced to 10 months in prison, pay a $50,000 fine, and ordered to give $100,000 to the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation for species and habitat restoration. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Seward artist with a rich legacy in the state.
I couldn't throw a pot to save me. And I said to myself, you know, I'm really good at watercolor.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management today gave its conditional approval to Shell's exploration plan for the Chukchi Sea next summer. The Bureau has already approved a similar plan for the Beaufort Sea. The company is proposing up to 6 exploration wells for the area. Environmental groups were quick to condemn the approval today. The Alaska Wilderness League called it a reckless decision and says there is no proven way to clean up an oil spill in the Arctic's extreme conditions. In a statement, Shell said the conditional approval is an important step, but the company is worried about a stipulation that could limit the duration of the drilling season, calling it an unwarranted restriction. Communities across the state are poring over Governor Sean Parnell's new budget proposal. One project that wasn't included in the capital budget is the South Peninsula Pipeline, a project that would bring natural gas into the Homer area for the first time. KBBI's Aaron Selbig asked the governor, why not?
For the last 2 years, officials in the Homer area have been lobbying hard for state funding of the South Peninsula Pipeline, a $10 million project that would make up the last 15 miles between Anchor Point and Homer and link up to 10,000 Alaskans to natural gas for the first time. The state legislature has signed off on that funding in its capital budget the last 2 years in a row, only to see it vetoed by Parnell. In probably his clearest remarks to date on the subject, Parnell said he would like to see the people of Homer pay for at least some of the gas pipeline themselves.
Approximately 400 plus thousand people on the Kenai Peninsula, in Anchorage, in the Matsu Borough, have all paid for their main lines through their rates. What I have continually said to your representative is that when the Homer community will pay as part of the tariff for a part of that gas line and participate in it, that's when I would consider it in conjunction with all the other capital projects.
Matsu and Anchorage, to compare us to them, I don't think is fair, because they're highly concentrated populations within close proximity to each other. Homer is far away and isolated.
That's Homer City Manager Walt Reedy. He says there is no way the people of Homer could afford to pay the full $10 million, an amount roughly equal to 1 year of the city's general fund budget, towards the construction of a main gas pipeline.
That's why state assistance is needed, because, you know, that's what government does. Alaska is a sparsely populated state, and we're scattered over a vast geographical area. And for the most part, these utility extensions are not going to pencil out.
Representative Paul Seaton represents Homer in the state legislature and has pushed hard for the South Peninsula Pipeline over the last couple of years. He says that when you factor in all the costs of bringing in natural gas, including the build-out of a gas network in Homer and upgrading to appliances that run on natural gas, the community simply cannot afford to pay for the main pipeline.
If the transmission line has to be paid for by the small consumer base that's here, that means that the price would probably be pretty close to what it is to be on heating oil.
Even if some kind of tariff arrangement could be made between gas supplier NSTAR and the Homer community, Parnell would not commit Thursday to approving state money for the South Peninsula Pipeline.
I'm not going to be in the mode yet of saying yes or no on projects, but that's that's a position I've been consistent on. It's, you know, for me, it's not whether I like a natural gas pipeline or not. It's kind of fairness and equity among Alaska residents.
If that's his position, it means that a gas line from the North Slope is absolutely uneconomic to build the South Central.
Seaton promises to keep fighting for the South Peninsula Pipeline, which he sees as possibly the single biggest potential economic driver in the history of the Southern Kenai Peninsula. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
A renovated motel will offer a safe haven for chronic inebriates in Fairbanks. The Tanana Chiefs Conference has nearly completed work on the former Best Western near downtown Fairbanks. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Housing First model has proven successful across the lower 48, and Anchorage has a similar facility. Tanana Chiefs Conference Project Director Shirley Lee told a large group assembled for a ribbon-cutting event Thursday that a place to live is the threshold to a better life.
We believe, as the Housing First models across the nation believe, that by providing a safe place to live, it provides the first step for people to develop the skills for improved lives and self-sufficiency and reintegration into the community.
The Housing First project will offer 47 low-rent apartments to homeless alcoholics. Meals will be provided as well as daily welfare checks. Recovery and job training programs will be available on site. Lee says it's aimed at breaking a cycle of living on the street, drinking, and moving through the revolving doors of the legal and medical systems.
Being taken to the ER or detox or to jail, giving them permanent housing, creates a stability that allows them then to take a breather and look at and address their other issues, such as alcohol.
Lee says Housing First residents will be allowed to drink in their apartments, but not in common areas. The multi-million dollar Fairbanks Housing First project has been fostered and funded by a number of organizations, agencies, and businesses, including TCC, the Alaska Mental Health Trust, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Rasmussen Foundation, and Fountainhead Development. TCC President Jerry Isaac praised cooperation among the diverse partners for realizing the project.
We may have differing agendas, but you know, there's always this one commonality we all share: being human and living in the community.
The Housing First apartments will begin taking applications next month. The other half of the building will operate separately as a motel for people from 43 TCC region villages who come to Fairbanks for medical care and need a safe, low-cost place to stay. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works. Support for AK comes from the Federal Aviation Administration, providing information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. FAA.gov/go/FlyAlaska or toll free at 1-866-357-4704.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Daisha Eaton. Today on AK, an artist's legacy in Alaska. After 4 decades in Seward, one of Alaska's best-loved artists is taking a look back at the events and the environment that shaped her life and her work. Dot Barterson has long been an icon for her award-winning watercolors. But as KSKA's Ellen Lockyer reports, even in her 80s, the ever-versatile artist has no plans to slow down.
It's a dreamy winter day in Seward. Plump snowflakes plummet straight down. Outside Dot Barterson's house, chimes sound in a light breeze, but the overcast sky obscures what would be a striking view of Mount Marathon.
I'm going to knock on the door.
Inside, Dot's husband, Lene, snoozes on the couch while Melody the cat perches on the staircase. Dot's approaching her 80th birthday now. Although she is so lively, one would never guess her years. She laughs that life took her from a deckhand on a fishing tender to a creator and a collector of art. It's a life many nowadays would envy. Over tea, Dot tells me how she came to Alaska.
I met my husband, Lene, and he swept me off my feet.
Fishing brought them north in the 1970s.
My husband was managing a crab plant in Alaska. He had this opportunity to come to Seward and help construct and operate Seward fisheries. That was in 1970. So we moved to Seward. We never even heard of Seward. It was a small town. The highway that comes into Seward wasn't even paved. There were 13 bars and 13 churches.
It was raw, she says, but then her life took another turn.
I started making ink sketches all over town. There were so many things to draw, and they were selling. And then I started doing the watercolors all over town. So then I entered a show in 1973 over in Kenai and won Best of Show. And it was at that point that I realized that I was going to actually be able to make some money at it. It wasn't going to be a hobby.
In college, Dot had studied everything, from pottery to wood carving, and realized that the Alaska landscape, although rough, provided a unique palette for her watercolors.
I couldn't throw a pot to save me. And I said to myself, you know, I'm really good at watercolor. And if I want to be really good at something for the rest of my life, I should probably concentrate on that.
Her work quickly captured recognition.
I thought we'd go out to the studio.
Sure, okay. Dot's studio is in a tiny cabin behind the house. She gives me a tour through perfectly ordered clutter.
I'm in the process of cataloging all my work, and that's a big project. So here I have the photographs.
Carvings, watercolors, gadgets, and works in progress fill it practically to capacity. A drafting table in one corner is crowded with an artist's tools.
And this is a design I'm working on for the Mural Society. The city of Seward is taking a mural to Obihiro, Japan, which is our sister city.
Dot owned her own gallery in Seward for many years, representing some of Alaska's best-known artists. A working artist herself, she understands the unique position artists are in.
Well, an art needs to be compensated. You spend hours and hours and hours putting a piece together, and then you have the cost of the framing, and everybody knows how much that costs. And then if it's sold from a gallery, they're going to take 40 to 50%, sometimes 55%. And so what's left for the artist? You're not taking much home.
She learned the business end of art and says marketing is a major component in success. After close to half a century in Seward, Dot says there's not one thing she'd do differently. All her children and grandchildren live there, too. She pulls out a scrapbook crammed with photos and lyrics.
So here's our Barterson family songbook. The songs in the front are all songs that I've written.
Did I mention Dot plays guitar and piano? She's a reluctant performer, but that's her on the keys of her baby grand. Some years ago, Dot wrote a song to the city she calls home. Seward, Beautiful Resurrection Bay, is the city's official song now and graces the city's website. What's next? Dot says she just takes it as it comes. For AK, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And now it's time for 300 Villages. Today, we're traveling north of Nome to the village of Brevig Mission on the Seward Peninsula coast.
My name is Alfred Kaitelic. I'm the city clerk over here in Brevik, for Brevik Mission. We're about maybe 70, 80 miles from Nome, north of Nome. We've got a small village, about maybe a little over 400 people. I like it over here because it's nice and quiet. And the reason why I stayed here is because of the hospitality. Everybody's real nice. It's just hospitable. For recreation, they always go to the gym. We got activities during November for Thanksgiving. We had a turkey shoot ball tournament. We had people come in from Shishmaref, Teller, Nome come in for the ball tournament. On the 24th, we have a feast going on that the traditional is going to be hosting. We select some people to cook at home, to make soups, to bring to the school, so that the whole community can get together and celebrate Christmas. This Christmas, we got activities, regular Eskimo games, we got racing for the kids, Eskimo games, we got leg wrestling, air pool, seal hop, one-arm carry. You're all welcome. That's the main thing I feel around here is you're welcome.
Alfred Kaitelic is the city clerk for Brevik Mission. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ellen Lockyer, Lori Townsend, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lorelei Kanin in Nome, Matt Miller in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our guest host for AK this week was Daisha Eaton. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by ConocoPhillips Alaska and Mattsu Health Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.